without popping this thing off. Everyone hear me okay? Captain Mark Lugaro. So I oversee the Rancho San Diego Station. It's actually a command. We are responsible for the area that we sit in today, Jamul, unincorporated La Mesa, all the way to the city of Lemon Grove, and believe it or not, Imperial Beach. So we don't deploy deputies from here to Imperial Beach. We have another station out there, but that is under my command as well. And that includes Bonita and Lincoln Acres. I've been on the department just coming up on 27 years. I am an East County guy. I've been all over the county with the department. I spent about 7 years up in the North County, Encinita, Solana Beach, Del Mar. I didn't even know where that was until they sent me up there because I grew up in Oklahoma. Right, we never leave East County. I went to Valhalla High School. My daughter attended school here. She's now a sophomore at Valhalla. I have family members here. My brother lives out here. My parents live out here. My father's Calvin, so need I say more. About 300 cousins that live out here. And the reason why I'm sharing that with you is I want you guys to know that I'm not just a captain of a jurisdiction. I'm not just a deputy that's working in a certain area. I have a vested interest in the safety and security of your children and the staff here at this school. When things don't go right here, we get those threats, believe me, I get my phone starts blowing up from my mom, to my brother, my cousins, and everyone wants to know what's going on. And I have to put them on ice and say, just give me a minute, I'll get back to you guys. So we share all of your concerns. We do live in kind of a different era now than when we were all in school. The school threat thing is unfortunately something that we've become accustomed to. It's unfortunate. I just want you guys to know that we take every one of those threats very seriously. And the way we respond to the school, I think I'm kind of going off what I wanted to talk about today, but we'll get a little more detail about our processes and why we do what we do and how we respond. And sometimes that response sends a scary message to you guys. When you're coming to pick up your kids and you're seeing four patrol cars with the lights on and deputies here, that's just because that's how we respond. It doesn't mean necessarily that something bad is happening. And that's a tough thing to tell folks, you know, that's just how we do business. 99.9% of the time, these threats are false, and we do our homework, we investigate them. We have one of our detectives here today, I'll introduce him a little bit later. And you know, thankfully we haven't had anything bad happen. From my experience, over the years, one thing I have noticed, and that is, when something bad's gonna happen, generally, people don't tell us. Generally speaking, when we get these types of threats, it's usually something to do with a kid not wanting to go to school. When I was a lieutenant in Imperial Beach, we had a kid say that he was on top of a roof with a gun. He was doing it from Ireland on his internet, on his laptop. So, you know, with technology these days, people can threaten anyone they want. The same suspect that did the IB once shut down the bridge in Michigan, Canadian Michigan Bridge. So, you know, these threats are coming from a lot of different places with a lot of different motivations. I'll kind of leave it at that. I want to introduce my lieutenant, Juan Marquez, and he'll give a little background on himself and his ties to this community as well.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I appreciate all you guys coming here. I know everybody's life is busy, and myself and my captain are very happy that you guys are here because you guys, we know that you guys care, and you guys are here because you guys want to help us out also. Like my captain mentioned, I'm the lieutenant in charge of the Rancho San Diego Station and in charge, of course, of this community here. I've been working for the Sheriff's Department for 21 years now. I started my career working at the Lemon Grove Station. At that time, the Lemon Grove Station patrolled this area. Now we have moved to the Rancho San Diego Station. So I was a brand new deputy here. I worked for 7 years. I was a patrol deputy, training officer, a corporal, and then I worked the gang suppression.
This is how we do business. 99.9% of the time, these threats are false. And we do our homework, we investigate them. We have one of our detectives here. We'll introduce him a little bit later. And you know, thankfully we haven't had anything bad happen. From my experience, over the years, one thing I have noticed, and that is when something bad's gonna happen, generally people don't tell us. Generally speaking, when we get these types of threats,
It's usually something to do with a kid not wanting to go to school. When I was a lieutenant in Imperial Beach, we had a kid say that he was on top of a roof with a gun. He was doing it from Ireland on his internet, on his laptop. So, you know, with technology these days, people can threaten anyone they want. The same suspect that did the IB one shut down the bridge in Michigan, Canadian Michigan Bridge. So, you know, these threats are coming from a lot of different places with a lot of different motivations. I'll kind of leave it at that. I want to introduce my lieutenant, Juan Marquez, and he'll get a little background on himself and his ties to this community as well.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I appreciate all you guys coming here. I know everybody's life is busy, and myself and my captain are very happy that you guys are here because you guys, we know that you guys care. And you guys are here because you guys want to help us out also. Like my captain mentioned, I'm the lieutenant in charge of the Rancho San Diego Station and in charge, of course, of this community here. I've been working for the Sheriff's Department for 21 years now. I started my career working at the Lemon Grove Station. At that time, the Lemon Grove Station patrolled this area. Now we have moved to the Rancho San Diego Station. So I was a brand new deputy here. I worked for 7 years. I was a patrol deputy, training officer, a corporal, and then I worked the gang suppression team. Thankfully, most of my time in the gang suppression team, it was away from here, and it was down in Spring Valley and Lemon Grove. So that's a good thing for this community, that my team did not spend much time here. At the time, Captain Garmo was the sergeant for that team. From then, I went on and became a detective also for the Lemon Grove Station, and I was in charge of this area in Spring Valley. During that time, I also was with the SWAT team. I spent 4 years with the SWAT team, and I can tell you, we trained a lot on active shooters, and they still do. They train more now than probably ever. Our department is constantly training. Every 2 years, our deputies need to attend a 3-day training, and our last cycle and this cycle, they're concentrating on active shooters. So things changed drastically from 1999, from the high school in Colorado Columbine, when we had that active shooter who took many lives, innocent lives of kids. Since then, we totally changed our tactics. We had to. Before, it was more of control, contain, and communicate. So there was active shooters inside the school, and we would control the situation, contain it, and communicate. But now we found out that we can no longer do that. So what we do now, without getting too much into tactics, we go, as soon as we respond, we go to where the shots are being fired. So the first two deputies that arrive, they're not gonna wait. They're gonna go and address that threat. That's something to keep in mind. We're not gonna sit back. And I guarantee you that you're gonna see every single department here, or wherever this is, and it happens, hopefully it never happens, but you're gonna see our brothers from El Cajon, from La Mesa, from CHP, they're gonna be coming down from Chula Vista, from San Diego. We all train the same. We attend the Regional Law Enforcement Academy. It's a regional academy where every department in San Diego County goes through the same training. So we all know, if me and him respond to a certain incident, I know what he's going to be doing, and he knows what I'm going to be doing because we train together. So that's a benefit in this county. Thanks, and I appreciate all you guys being here.
Can I add just one thing real quick? I don't know if you're going to meet Ryan Love here shortly. For those of you that don't know him, security director. What's your title, Ryan?
Coordinator, safety and security.
Okay, coordinator, safety and security. Ryan is also a former deputy sheriff who we both worked with in the past, and a former investigator with the district attorney's office. So you guys are very lucky to have him on board. The fact that we all have a working relationship over the past 20 years definitely helps. We have each other's cell phone numbers, and when something comes down, we are communicating immediately. Immediately, we're on the phone with each other, coordinating our response.
We're also grateful to have Captain Rob Reinsweiler from the El Cajon Police Department.
Good evening, everybody. I'll start by saying that if the lieutenant and I are responding to a call together, something has really gone wrong. Yeah, I'm the operations captain for the El Cajon Police Department. I've employed there for 24 years. I thought I was just going to introduce myself, but evidently I got to have a script. I too am an East County person. I used to live in Tristan, right down the street on Via Ranch of San Diego. I lived there for 5 years, owned a condo, and then moved up north. But I grew up in Lakeside, graduated from El Capitan, started working, coached at El Cap for 9 years in high school football. So this whole East County community is very familiar to me. And like I said, 5 years down here in Tristan, when it was first built, and shopping center over there by Hooley's, I was mad that that wasn't here. I sold because there was nothing to do down here, and then of course they built everything, so I'm upset. But I'm here mainly as support tonight and show unity within the school district and within law enforcement. I won't answer many of your questions unless you have a specific one about El Cajon PD, because you're in the Sheriff's Department's jurisdiction. Operations at El Cajon, I'm in charge of everything with a uniform. So if they're from the gang team, SWAT team, crisis negotiation team, patrol, our community policing division, our traffic division, everything else falls under operations. So if you guys have any questions about that type of stuff, feel free to ask. I'd be more than happy to answer, okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob. Before we introduce our program, I'm gonna have Trustee Miller introduce himself.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Jim Miller, and I am the school board trustee for our area. As with Captain Garmo, I went to Walhalla High School. I grew up out here. My kids went through Hillsdale. My youngest is at Vista Grande and will be coming to Hillsdale. I also coach club soccer and softball locally, so I coach a number of the girls that attend this school. The school is very near and dear to my heart. I was here last night for soccer practice. What happens at this school, as with Captain Garmo, if something happens and he gets 300 calls, something happens, I get 300 calls. There's nothing more important and nothing we take more seriously than the education of your children and the safety of your children. Please trust that from all the trustees on our board. There's a reason why we engaged Ryan Love, and other districts in this county have not engaged such a professional. There's a reason, as he goes through his presentation, you'll find out how we've spent money, hopefully smartly, because it's our money, it's our taxpayer money, to protect our kids. We've taken a lot of steps that a lot of districts have not taken. They've talked about it, but they haven't taken those steps. It's very important to me personally, professionally. I'm very happy to have the gentleman up here to speak. Now, I'll moderate a little bit later tonight when there's questions that will come from the floor, if there are any, but I have a list of questions that have come from the community, so thank you for asking those questions. And also, Captain Ransweiler here and I are actually neighbors at Tristan. Door next to us. And then my wife, before she became my wife, actually rented this condo before he sold it. So there's a lot of connection up here. We work very well. We're very collaborative. And we talk about having everybody's cell numbers. It's important to have that type of relationship with your law enforcement. With that, I will turn it over to Ryan. Are you up? Up. Our superintendent, Dr. Miyashiro, will make a statement here.
Thank you, Jim. My name is David Miyashiro. I'm the superintendent of the Cajon Valley School District. And we recognize that we are not perfect in providing for the safety and security of the students, and we're not perfect in our communication. But our goal is to be more perfect, and we've enlisted the help of both law enforcement agencies, and they've leaned in hard to make sure that we are equipped to provide for the most safe and secure school and community environment. To do that, the district last year hired two firms. One is ACOM, which is a physical plant study that surveyed all of our school sites and the district office to look at the physical structures to see what can we do to upgrade our sites to be as safe as they can be. The board also hired DMB, which studied our behaviors, our training, our procedures, and our policies to see what we needed to do to become more safe and more secure across. And in order to lead this work, the district hired retired peace officer Ryan Love as our coordinator of safety and security for the district. He's gonna share the result of the audits from these two companies, as well as our plans moving forward. We're gonna discuss a couple incidents that happened here at Hillsdale that prompted these meetings to come sooner than later in terms of our preparation. And then we have some questions that came from you that Trustee Miller will facilitate. And then if we have time, we'll take some open mic questions. But we're grateful for being here. It's a partnership to be safe, and your role is just as important as ours. So without that, Ryan, our coordinator of safety and security.
Thank you, Dr. Miyashiro. Since everyone's sharing with high school. They went to, I went to Montemiso High School. It is so important for us to be here tonight to be talking about security. Again, my name is Ryan Love. I'm the coordinator of safety and security for the district. But more importantly, I'm a father of a first grader that attends school here inside the district. And then my daughter attended Hilldale Middle School last year. I've been trying to get the principal to tell me if she was good or not, but he hasn't disclosed that or not, if she was. I'm going to share with you tonight a little bit about my background. I'm also going to talk a little bit about my role inside this district, and then I'm going to talk about the two security consultants that the district hired to assist us in our security measures moving forward. So I spent 24 years, 18 years with the Santa Ana County Sheriff's Department, 6 years with the District Attorney's Office. I worked at jails, I worked patrol. I was one of the many officers, first responders that responded to the Santa Ana High School shooting in 2001. And then shortly after that, we had the Granite Hills High School shooting. So this community has been impacted. Every time I hear about shooting across this nation, I relive those experiences. From there, I was a school resource officer at Valhalla High School back in 2001, shortly after the 9/11 attacks. And then I promoted to the detective. And then my last assignment at the Sheriff's Department, I was assigned to the DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration Narcotic Task Force. 2011, I went over to the District Attorney's Office as the gang prosecution unit. And then my last assignment, I was the lead DEA investigator assigned to the FBI San Diego Human Trafficking Task Force. I retired August of 2017. I met with Dr. David Mirashiro, and I really believe had I met with any other superintendent in this county, I'd still be out playing golf. Yeah. So with that, So my role as the coordinator in safety and security is I work very closely with the school administrators at identifying strategies to help them keep the school safe. I have a very strong relationship with our local law enforcement partners. I work very closely with the Elkhorn Police Department and the Santa Ana County Sheriff's Department in making sure that there's no crime, disruptive behaviors, or violent behaviors within our schools, and then improving communications to the community when it involves safety at our schools. I really do want to commend this district, the school board, and Dr. Mirashiro for taking security and making it a top priority, not just by hiring me, because they hired those two outside security consultant firms to come in and take a look at our infrastructure and our policy and procedures, and then they provided us with recommendations on how we can proceed moving forward. So I'm going to give you a little presentation on their work moving forward. The first security company, AECOM, they came in and they looked at our, did a district-wide security assessment, threat, vulnerability, and risk assessment at all of our school sites. They interviewed all our administrators. They conducted very thorough walkthroughs, and then they provided us with recommendations on how we can improve in those areas. The second firm, DMV, they conducted security-wide assessments, and they had two phases. The first phase, they reviewed our policy procedures. They reviewed our site safety plans, our district site safety plans. They conducted interviews, and then they provided our staff with climate surveys on where we are in the event of an emergency, how prepared we would be. The second phase of DMV's work, they assisted me with observing lockdown drills. We probably observed probably 15 or so lockdown drills over the course of a few months. And then we were able to provide feedback to administrators and so that they can share information to their staff on what areas that they needed to improve on in their drills. And now we're going to be moving into the third phase, which is we're going to be developing a district-wide training curriculum for the entire district. Meanwhile, I'm going to be looking at developing new policies and procedures and also making sure that we're implementing best practices across the district. So this is what AECOM focused on when they conducted their security walkthroughs. And obviously there's a lot of information up here, so I'm gonna go rather quickly, but mainly I just want you, the community, to know that we recognize some of our deficiencies within our districts, and we're going to be working very hard to address each and every one of those concerns. When AECOM provided us with their final recommendations, we provided that to district staff, key stakeholders, so we could look at cost and see what items might be a maintenance item or what items might be a bond initiative in 2020. For instance, our keys and padlocks, just the other day, we had an administrator come on campus and one of our locks were missing from our gates. So obviously we want to make sure we contacted our facilities manager, and almost immediately we had that lock replaced onto our padlock, that padlock onto our gate. We understand that we have outside community activities, and because of that, we want to make sure that those outside sporting events that we know who has our keys, and so we do want to have key accountability to make sure we know who possesses those. When AECOM looked at our locking system, it's very important that all our classroom doors lock from the inside and not from the outside. In the event of an emergency, staff can just run in, lock the doors to prevent anybody from entering in case of an emergency. And then in the main office, we have different configurations and layouts throughout our district. And so we want to make sure that we have proper signage. We want to make sure that we don't block natural surveillance. So if you're in the front office and you're looking outside, you can see who's coming, who's approaching. So we're also going to be looking, as you see these doors here that are tinted, we're going to be looking to go to a tent in front of our doors so we can see out, but it's very difficult for people to see in. It's just another added measure of security for our front office staff. Fences, this is obviously our first line of defense for outsiders. We need to make sure that they're in good working condition, there's no holes. Obviously, because of our large fields, especially here at Hillsdale Middle School, we want to make sure that if people are getting onto our on our field, that they cannot have access onto our campus. Lighting, we've had discussions about going to a sensor lighting system. The main thing about lighting is we want to make sure that they're not too bright. We want to be respectful of our neighbor communities, and they're not shining the lights into their front windows. CCTV, closed circuit TVs. Ideally, we would like to have monitors in our front office so we would be able to record and capture surveillance of people around our schools, and especially anyone that might be a threat coming into our front office doors. Notification, mass notification system. Because we have a lot of big fields on our fields, when we did our walkthroughs, we tested some of these the PA system to see where we have adequate coverage. We recognize that there are some areas out in the field, so we want to make sure that those are covered adequately and also inside our classrooms as well. Raptor system, that's when you come in and you sign into the front office. It's designed to alert sexual offenders and also to manage our custody issues when people walk into our campus. We just need to know who is on our campus when they come in. We know that it takes time when you check in, but that is for our safety, so we know who's on our campus. Parking. Believe me, I know how parking is out here in Hillsdale. Like I said, I had a daughter that went here last year. We just need your cooperation. The main thing I can say about parking is, for me, as a former police officer, I cringe when I see parents dropping their kids off across the street and having them run across the street into traffic just to get to the other side. And I'm sure my law enforcement partners will agree with that as well. Proper signage, building identifiers. This is to assist visitors. So if they're coming onto our campuses, we can direct them to the proper building and they don't end up being lost. Especially, especially important for our law enforcement and our medical and firefighters. So in the event of an emergency, if we're directing them to a building, they know exactly where they need to go. And then we've also talked about having rooftop identifiers on top of our roofs. So in the event that we had the law enforcement helicopters, they could see what building is where, and they could direct the ground units to those particular buildings in the event of an emergency. Obviously, we don't want our schools looking like prisons, but there are some vulnerable areas, such as the kindergarten areas, where we want to have private screening, especially areas that are near community parks to prevent people from communicating or giving passing anything off to our students. Obviously, being prepared is vital in an emergency, and so we need to understand what that means. Emergency preparedness for the district means training all staff in prevention, preparedness, responding, and recovering from emergencies that are caused by natural disasters and man-made events, such as violent incidents or larger scale acts of terror. And that goes for social media stuff too. I mean, obviously that's on a smaller scale, but it's still about responding and being prepared for that, and then going back to trying to get back to a normal operation as fast as possible. And that's the recovery portion. So DMV has identified, now we're going into the policy and procedure section with DMV, and they have identified the following threats associated with our district. And this is from interviews with our staff. This is what concerns our staff when it comes to their safety. Fire. We do an amazing job here. I got an opportunity to observe, I don't know, probably 10, 15 drills, and we do an amazing job at fire evacuation, lockdown drills, and earthquake drills. But we've been doing it for a very long time. So now the next step involving training is we're going to really be looking at other avenues to make sure that our staff and our students are safe on our campus. Hostile parent. This is probably one of the biggest things. There was not an administrator or an office manager that we did not talk to that has not had a dealing with a hostile parent. I had a conversation earlier today with someone, and they asked me, how many students do you talk to compared to a hostile or disruptive parent? And I can tell you, there's probably been maybe, out of 12 kids that I've talked to, there's probably about 40 hostile parents in this district. And so that's a big concern for our staff. And so we're going to be looking at providing our staff with de-escalation training and providing them with tools so that they can use to help them in that area. Unauthorized access. For me as a former police officer, this is one of my biggest fears. We really want staff to know that if they see somebody that doesn't belong, they don't have a visitor badge on, that they confront that person and make sure that they have legitimate business onto our campus. Targeted attack. We don't necessarily train for a targeted attack, but we're going to. Statistics say that we probably will not have a targeted attack, but it still doesn't mean that we're not going to train for it. The analogy that I heard the other day is there's not a good chance that we're going to win the lottery, but we still buy lottery tickets, right? So we're still going to train for a targeted attack just in the event. What we know is that when teachers are trained properly, it reduces the anxiety of students in the event of an emergency. So we at least want to make sure that they're prepared in the event, God forbid, that would happen. Custodial interference. Sometimes we just need direction on how to handle certain custodial issues. This is one of the things that it's a liability issue. We just want to make sure that we have clear instructions on how to handle those custodial issues. If someone has a court order that another parent is not supposed to be on campus or near their child. Transference of crime. We deal with this a lot in law enforcement. We just had this the other day where Elkhorn Police Department, they were looking for a suspect. He ended up on one of our campuses, one of our elementary schools, and the administrator did an amazing job at locking down the entire campus. And law enforcement was able to do their job, and it worked out pretty good. And then earthquake, again, we do a very good job at training earthquake, fire, and lockdown. So these are some of the recommendations that DMV provided us. These are the priority recommendations during their assessment. Establish uniform emergency response definitions. So if I said lockdown, shelter in place, a secure campus, rally points, evacuation sites, we want our staff to know exactly what those definitions mean and how they would respond in the event of an emergency situation. And then give our staff the authority to enact a response. So if I'm a teacher and I look outside the window, I want to get on the phone and dial 911, right? I want to get on the PA system and notify the entire school that there's a situation to lock the school down. So we want to give our teachers the authority to do that as well. And then train all staff. I don't care if you're a custodian, transportation, front office, we need to train all staff in emergency preparedness. And even our after school programs as well. There was a new law that passed this year where even our sporting events after hours are still going to need to be trained in emergency preparedness. And then established uniform redundancy notification. So when we conduct our drills, we're using the same language, and it doesn't matter what school you're at, if you're at Hillsdale or one of the other sites here in the district, that we're using the same language and it's consistent. And then adopt an age-appropriate option-based assailant system. We just have to be mindful of our younger children. But again, we just want to make sure that our staff is prepared in the event of an emergency so that students will follow what staff is doing and hopefully everybody can get out safely. Install lock devices. Every expert that I've talked to, they recommend that we keep our doors locked at all times. So there's this device that you can put on the door, and some of our schools do have them. And all it is, you keep the door locked, and it's a little piece of rubber that you can install into the door. So in the event that you had to put the school in lockdown, you would just remove that piece of rubber, shut the door, and the door would remain locked at all times. Provide site-specific barricade layering training for all staff and students. In the event of an active assailant, the number one response is to run, to escape, to get out of the area. But you may not have that option if you're in a classroom. So we want to provide our staff with training on barricading and layering their classrooms. Statistics show that active shooters, they know that law enforcement is coming. So they're trying to do as much damage as possible. They're not going to be, once they come to a locked door, they're just going to move on. They're not going to bother themselves with a locked door or barricaded classroom. Establish on-site evacuation, reunification, and rally points. I would tell our parents that law enforcement is going to dictate where those reunification sites are going to be, but in an event of an emergency, coming to the school is the last place that you're going to want to be, because they're going to have fire, law enforcement, every vehicle is going to be blocking your entry onto the campus. So going to a reunification site that we decide is going to be the fastest and quickest way to get your kids. So DMV has told us that we should develop a memorandum of understanding between schools and businesses. So shortly after the incident, the Chromebook incident in Hillsdale last November, I met with Cuyamaca College and I did develop an MOU between Cuyamaca and Hillsdale Middle School. So in the event that we did have to use their site as a reunification or evacuation site, they know what to expect. Also, in DMV's observation, they provided us with specific information on what we need to do moving forward, hazards and threats, definitions, response conditions, emergency notifications, protocols are not uniform, debriefs are not being conducted in the most effective manner, and information is not being shared. So with that, I developed a staff resource page, and this is where staff can go on and they can get common terminology, protocols, definitions, and learn about school safety. Every once in a while, I'll get a call from a staff member asking me a question about a particular security question. Well, chances are, if that staff member wants to know about it, every staff member wants to know about it. So I'm going to be putting it on the school resource page, and we're going to be able to put information in and take information out and keep it updated moving forward. So this was a post that we received probably about 3-4 weeks ago. And it says, and it was from Instagram, "Yo everyone, come to school tomorrow, I got gum." The thing is that this post was made back in November, but we didn't find out about it until about 3 weeks. But wouldn't it have been nice to know that this threat was out there? Turns out law enforcement looked into the situation and they found out that it was another high school student and it was just another practical joke, right? But he was trying to create fear into the community. So with that, we decided to go to a dedicated tip line for the district. And so we're going to be rolling out, I know most people are familiar with Crime Stoppers, so it's not enough just to say something when you see something, but it's who to say it to, right? So I would encourage you to, you can download it on your phones, So if you have a concern or a problem about somebody at your school, then you can reach out to Crime Stoppers. The great thing about Crime Stoppers is it goes straight to law enforcement, and then they can take the appropriate action. And I know you didn't probably get a chance to read that introduction on the staff internet page, but I'm going to read this. And this is kind of my philosophy, and then I'll leave you with this. School safety is a function that we here at the district must take very serious, no matter our role or function. The purpose of this resource page is to ensure that everyone here at the district works together to make sure our students have a safe place to learn, grow, and thrive. If everyone does their part, we can pride ourselves at being the best or the safest place to work, live, and play. This resource page will assist staff with understanding district policies and procedures as it relates to emergency preparedness suggestions and recommendations to remove school safety, key terminology that you should be familiar with, and a Q&A section. Our children are our most important resource. Ensuring that they are safe in our schools is our most important task. So let's work together to make that happen. Thank you so much for your attention and your cooperation.
Ryan, before we get into the Q&A portion and have Jim facilitate, we had a couple incidents that happened prior to the break, and I think that our parent community would love to just have us talk about what happened, where we were, and what we learned moving forward.
Yeah.
And for all of us that were involved, Marco, also. Jake, why don't you start?
Is this one on too? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Awesome. So what we're talking about was the Thursday in November that resulted us going in lockdown at about 4:15 p.m. So the incident started, and it was the second compounding one from the Chromebook one that started beforehand. And what we learned from that was there was a high leveling of anxiety and fear in parents and kids going into it. But what happened was about 3:15, a student reported to their coach that a family member had made a threat to them from a car on Fury. Now, how it got to me was I was sitting in the quad speaking with another child about another situation going on campus, and I got radio from campus security that this child had said this and that they were on their way to me. The student passed three adults to go tell a different adult. So where the incident occurred was on the gate right by Fury. They didn't tell anyone until they got back to the locker room and they were doing running in a PE class. So about 5 minutes went by, so it's about 3:20. My campus security picked up the student, brought him up to me, dropped him off, and started to send him into the office that he needs to report what just happened. And Jake, you need to get in the cart. We need to go figure out what just happened. I said, okay. So I got in the cart. We asked the kid what just occurred. And he said, my aunt was in the car. My aunt was in the car and said something to me. He said, okay, go in the office. I called my assistant principal out of her meeting at the time and said, you need to go talk to this kid. We need to figure out what's going on. I radioed my office manager and said, call the sheriff's department. Let them know that a student was reported that a family member who's not supposed to be around just made a threat to them. And tell them I'm going to be down in Fury because that's where it had occurred. I went down there. PE was still going on. Kids are still running. It's like 3:23. Normally, at about 3:24, they go back into the PE locker room. I radioed the PE coaches and said, guys, send everyone into the locker room a minute early and have them go get dressed while we figure out what's going on. Myself and campus security began to go along the fence line and look for the black Corolla that we were looking for. My AP secretary's my AP is asking questions to the kid. I said, ask the kid, who was it? What car was it? Where were they going? The student reported that it was an aunt and she was on her way home, that she was leaving and heading up Fury. So we didn't think that she was around anymore. We couldn't find anything that was around. My PE coach is radioing me back. What are we doing? I said, have the kids get changed, okay? And then the bell's gonna ring in about 2 minutes for them to be released. Are we gonna release the kids? I said, yes, we're still gonna release the kids at this point. No one go up to Apollinaria. Normally we open the Apollinaria gate to allow kids out. Normally it's a PE coach who goes up there and they head up there before the kids get dressed out. So it was just keep it closed, tell the kids everything's fine, and send every kid out the front. I stayed down by Fury looking, talking with parents. I don't know if any of you here that were there. You guys were asking me, is everything okay? I said, everything's fine. We had a kid say that a family member was around, which happens, and we can't find it. Have you seen a black Corolla or any of this? No, I haven't seen it. Four boys walked past me at this time. We'll get to that part of the fun story, too. About 10 minutes go by and we're releasing. Okay? Kids are going home and everything's fine. We have some students begin to cross the field down there to go across Fury towards the park. Some kids cut across there. The second gate was locked. I headed down to the second gate to open it for them. Some parents had told me that there was four boys sitting in the park and that they were making comments to the kids as they were running, which is great that we're gonna start to look at that. I believe the high school got out early and there was four high school boys that were sitting in there and they were making comments to the kids as they were running. As soon as I unlocked the gate to let our kids out, okay, it's about 3:40 now. Everything that we've known is that one student had reported that someone had made a threat to them and they were in the office. I opened it, you hear the sirens go off all throughout the community. It was woo, woo, right? It's about 3:42 and I'm literally as far away from the front office as you can get on our campus. So I start to head back and I'm running back because I watched the cop cars go blaring by and they stopped right on Brabham and started to push the kids the other way. We had no understanding of why. We had called the cops to let them know. Normally one sheriff will show up. We had said that I would be down on Fury, but all of a sudden seven cop cars showed up. The reason that they had shown up was a student, when we had sent the kids into the locker room, called and reported to the sheriff that there was a man wearing blue jeans, a beanie, and had a gun in the locker room. When we released the students, that student just left. They didn't tell anyone. So when the sheriffs all showed up, and I finally got to the front at like 3:50, they were talking about this, but there wasn't a single adult on our campus that knew what they were talking about. Many people were trying to pick up their kids. The kids were getting shooed back towards the front of the school. My wonderful secretaries are trying to field all of the questions from everybody about what's happening. Everything that we know at that time was what we were handling in the AP office in terms of a student who had reported that a family member had made a threat from a car. There was about 10, 11 sheriff's deputies standing out in front. They were speaking with the student on the phone who had made the claim and had said that it was in the locker room at that time. And so they said, okay, we have to go search and clear the locker room. I asked them, how do you want to do this? I still have people on campus. It's about 3:50. We have clubs going on, we have kids getting tutoring and all that. We have EDP going on. And they said, well, we just need to get to the locker room and we need to clear the locker room because that's where the threat is. I said, okay. So I walked in front of the circle of 10 sheriffs and took them to the PE locker room, pointing out, that's my teacher. The lady in the red shirt, that's one of my PE coaches. That's Club Live. And we put them all in classrooms at the time. The sheriff then got to the locker room and they cleared the locker room. Found nothing. In the locker room. The only thing that was back there was PE coaches. There was Instagram posts of people standing by the locker room with a PE coach who was standing there while they cleared it. Yes, there was police officers kneeling with guns pointed because that is their awesome procedure to keep each other safe while they go do these things. They came back out of the locker room. It's about 4:05 and they called the student back and one of the officers shook his head and said, the student said that they didn't really see anyone in the locker room but they had heard kids talking about this person earlier in the day. And they said, well, we need to clear your entire campus. So that was, okay, how do you want to clear it? You know that there's people everywhere. And the dialogue there was, okay, put them in lockdown then. And so we went into lockdown procedures, which meant that every teacher was to lock their doors and the kids were to sit on the ground. And then law enforcement and myself were going to go around and release all of them and get them back to the front. We called it lockdown procedures, but it wasn't the real, like, if there was an active shooter lockdown on our campus or we thought. That was the case, all of the secretaries in the front and everybody would have been shoot out. This time it was, we just need to clear the campus. We need to make sure that we go through door to door and make sure that there's nobody here, but we know that there's students in different areas and we want to safely get them to the front. So they cleared the area. It took about an hour between 4:15 and 5:15. Law enforcement broke into two teams with keys while the rest of us navigated everything up front. And then the incident was over at about 5:15. That was that Thursday, in a nutshell.
Mark, would you mind sharing from your end how you experienced what you saw?
Yeah, I just happened to be at the Kaiser down the street at a doctor's appointment for high blood pressure. And my phone is blowing up, and I gotta go. There's a threat at the junior. He goes, well, I guess I know why you have high blood pressure. So I was kind of in a half uniform. I had my black t-shirt on. I just took my shirt off to go to my doctor's appointment. So I got here. My phone was just exploding, and I think the district got unfair criticism from, I'm not saying all of you specifically, but from a lot of parents that you guys weren't being updated. So you just heard the story. They had no idea what we knew. And I don't want to sound like we don't care about keeping you guys in the loop, but honestly, that's like the last thing on our minds.
When we're responding here, our number one priority is to address the threat. The rest of the stuff, we will do our press release, we'll put it out on Twitter, our Instagram page, and this, we'll coordinate the school to get the message out to you guys. But I ask all of you just to be patient. Let us allow us to vet the threat, allow us to respond. And I kind of touched on it earlier in my introduction, is that when you see all those patrol cars lined up, it does look scary. It looks like, oh my God, what's going on at the school? And I get that. Even as a 27-year law enforcement person, when I see that, I always think, man, what's going on over there? But we're responding to a threat, and we have to take every single threat very seriously. Even though in the back of our minds, a lot of times, we're kind of like, is this valid? But we train not to think like that, because that's what will cause us to get hurt, right? We have to go in there with our guns drawn in a formation, and it's a scary-looking thing. But at the end of the entire scenario, we realized it was really irresponsible reporting on one kid's behalf. And if you take anything from today's presentation, you're going to hear all of us talk. You know, when you go back home and you talk to your children, one of the very important things is that when they see a post or someone says something to them, have them tell you. Don't repost it on Instagram, because now you've got, you know, all these parents and kids that are seeing this post. And most of the time, it's an irresponsible post. It's something that's been reposted from November, from a time, different time frames. It may not even be from the school district. It could be from out of state. We've even had those where it was in a different state. And things get really, you get the domino effect, and then you get everyone's anxiety's up, and then they're, you know, everyone's screaming at the school, how come we don't know what's going on, no transparency. You know, we live in an era of immediate information, right? So you guys are having to wait more than probably 3 minutes for an update. You guys are starting to get a lot of anxiety. I would just ask you guys to be patient. I know it's difficult, they're your children, and the last thing any of us wants is something bad to happen to them, but I just ask you to have some faith and trust in our ability to do our jobs and keep them safe, and you will get notified in a timely manner, but we can't do any notifications until we know exactly what we have. Sometimes that takes a little bit of time.
Captain Garland, that dovetails in. So we received a number of previous questions from the community, and that actually dovetails right into the first question that the community brought to us, which is the communication aspect that you just touched about, which is what type of protocols are there for the communication? Can you explain a little bit about the PIO and how that would work? And what does Grossmont High School, what does the union, Grossmont High School union do that would maybe help us as a template?
So I work closely with three different school districts in this jurisdiction, not to mention South Bay's Imperial Beach district out there. So we have a really good working relationship, just like we do with you guys, but they have a dedicated PIO, Public Information Officer at the Grossmont Union High School District. Her name's Catherine Martin. She's a great resource. So what happens is, if we have a situation like this at one of the high schools, which we do, that falls into our jurisdiction, and I'm sure, Rob, you've probably worked with Catherine on many cases.
Love Catherine and Lucia.
Lucia, they're awesome. They're all great. So she's on the horn with me immediately. Marco, you guys heard about the threat? I said, yeah, we got it. We're responding to Monta Vista right now. And she's already typing out a press release. You know, she's like, okay, I'm typing the release. I'm saying that we received a threat this morning, unsubstantiated, Sheriff's Department's responding. Anything else you want me to add? I said, yeah, just add in there that parents do not respond to the school yet. Allow Sheriff's Department to investigate this. It's unsubstantiated. We have no suspect information. Undetermined whether or not it's valid at this point. We are investigating. So she's getting that message out in that timely manner. And unfortunately, I think Ryan has kind of, you know, been the pseudo PIO. It wasn't really, I don't think, what he signed up for. So you guys currently don't have a dedicated PIO with the school, with this district. And that's something when we had a round table a month or so ago at the school district, is one of the recommendations I made. I know everything costs money, right? So just something to think about. And that would kind of fill that gap between law enforcement, the district, and you guys.
Now the next line of questioning, again, continues with the same communications concept. Parents seem concerned that the students are communicating amongst themselves, and as such, either have information that is accurate or inaccurate, versus communicating it with adults and other parents. And I know parents, it's hard to believe that, you know, the kids are going to talk amongst themselves first between, they could be in the same room, they're still going to text each other. But that communication really needs to go to an adult. Can you give some suggestions as to what the parents here can take back to their children about who do they communicate with and when?
Mike, do you want to, are you comfortable addressing that issue? So Mike Pavitt is one of our juvenile detectives out of Rancho San Diego. Long history out here, working out of Lemon Grove and Rancho San Diego. So he investigates all crimes that involve juveniles, so anyone under the age of 18. Mike?
Thank you, Captain. So kids are always going to talk to each other, talk to their brothers, talk to their friends, Snapchat, social media, texting, and you're going to be sitting right next to them. And as a parent, you need to know what they're texting. So ask your son, ask your daughter, what are you guys talking about? Oh, there was a fight, or there's going to be a fight, and then that's how you get the information. Once parents communicate with the kids, and the kids can communicate back, it solves a lot of problems. If we have one kid telling another kid that there might be a fight or there might be a gun, and then it just gets blown out of proportion, that's the problem that we have as law enforcement, because then we're getting 20 911 calls, and the case has probably already been solved and investigated by school staff and patrol deputies.
So just to reiterate, it's just important that you guys have open dialogue with your kids, and that goes across all kinds of different genres, right? Not just school threats, but just, you know, reiterate to your kids about, hey, you guys hear about something serious going on at school, come to me first. Don't repost it 200 times and then just repost it exactly what the detective just said. Also, I kind of want to touch on the Chromebook threat. There was something a little bit more disturbing about that one, I think, as far as where I sit with my background. So I sit on the San Diego Regional Hate Crimes Coalition. And that coalition is made up of United States Attorney, District Attorney, and law enforcement. El Cajon regularly attends, San Diego PD, other agencies. Also the Anti-Defamation League, Imam Taha, who I have a very strong relationship with, from the Islamic Center of San Diego. Border Angels are there. All kinds of organizations, African American, LGBT, and the Chromebook threat was a little bit disturbing because it had a hate crime flavor to it. It had a swastika and a gun, and it talked about not liking my schoolmates. So we know how diverse this school is and how diverse San Diego is. We have Muslim students here, we have Chaldean students here, we have African American, Asian, Hispanic, and it just doesn't sit well with me that someone posted that. We don't know if it was even a student from the school, because that Chromebook was stolen. We don't know where that student came from, but it's just really important that you guys take that message home to your kids, because hate and prejudice and bigotry starts at home. So reiterate to your kids tolerance, celebrate everyone's culture and their ethnicity. That's what makes San Diego great. That's what makes us such a great city. And the East County is such a great portion of San Diego, is our ability to all work together and get along. And that did kind of bother me a little bit. Unfortunately, we weren't able to identify a suspect in that case, but that's something we take very seriously. The school district, the sheriff's department, El Cajon PD, we have a zero tolerance when it comes to hate and hate crime incidents. So please, those of you that are sitting out here, that their children come home and tell you guys that someone made a comment regarding their race, their religion, their sexual orientation, or anything, please encourage them to report it, because we want to know what's going on. There's nothing worse than a child being fearful to go to school because they're going to be targeted for any of those attributes that they have.
Thank you for those answers. Now, the next line of questioning that came in from the community involved quote-unquote active shooter training, and also had questions, and Ryan, you may want to address this, on our physical structures, how our offices are set up to either respond, or how are the facilities set up to prevent those types of people just walking onto campus, or that type of an incident from just walking onto campus. And it's open to the panel, but Ryan, you may want to address it first.
Yeah, well, the active assailant, I mean, we really have to, like I said, we have to be mindful of our younger students. I mean, right now, we're really looking at making sure that our staff is trained appropriately in dealing with an active assailant. But again, we want our kids to respond appropriately. I mean, we are already teaching them stranger danger, right? We're, you know, we have to be creative when we are talking to our kids about hiding, you know, go play hide and go seek. Because at the end of the day, we want them to respond appropriately. Our front offices and the way things are set up, it's important that once we get things in place like surveillance cameras and like I talked about having open surveillance, we want to be able to have clear views of bushes that are shaved, and you know, we just don't want to block natural surveillance. So it's very important that we know who's approaching our school so we can act appropriately. Like I talked about, like barricading and layering, that's a training. And you really have to be involved in that. I mean, you can watch a video all day long, but it's all about application and actually training to know how to do that properly to prevent somebody from coming into a classroom or inside a building. Would anybody else like to add?
So was that a question on the actual terminology of active shooter and that maybe not sit well with the students? Is that?
No, that we're getting
that's
there.
That's a different one. Okay, we're getting there. I don't know if Lieutenant Marquez wants to address anything with the active shooter portion of it. He's a SWAT trained guy, so he's our tactical guy. He's the guy we lean on when it comes to tactics and response.
When it comes to active shooter training, we as the Sheriff's Department, we train a lot because we know it's very important to all of us. I mean, I have kids myself also. So we're often training on that, also our SWAT team. We also provide training for the schools, and we'll have our juvenile detectives come in or our school resource officers come in and do training. And they'll teach the kids how what to do when there's an active shooter. I know as of right now, we're still training, correct me if I'm wrong. When there's an active shooter, when there's rounds being shot inside of the school, they're taught to, if they're inside the classroom, everybody stays inside the classroom, the teachers, is to lock that door, and they don't open that door for anybody. The school comes in, and the deputies come in, the school staff knows that they're gonna have a key set for us, and we just go from door to door and make sure that those rooms are cleared. The teachers know that they're not supposed to, again, open the door for anybody because the shooter's gonna come in and they're gonna try to open the door. If that door's open, they're gonna go in. If that door's locked, they're not gonna go in. They're gonna go to the next open door. So they're looking for that. They're trying to create havoc, and sadly enough, they're trying to take as many lives as possible because they know they have to do it quick because they know law enforcement is coming. And we're gonna be there quick, and there's gonna be a lot of us coming to protect the kids and save as many lives. And that's why now we trained that deputies respond or go to where they hear gunshots. So we might not know where the gunshots are at, we might not see them, but we can hear where they're coming from. So the first two deputies, if they hear gunshots, they're gonna be moving to that threat and stopping that threat because we know each second can be a life. So, sadly enough, the quicker we address the threat, the more lives we will save.
Thank you. Can I add something real quick, Jim?
Of course.
Well, we're talking a lot about training and the frequency of training and how much we train. And I just kind of want to explain something really basic. We train frequently for active shooter type incidents, and we talk about it a lot because of the turnover, right? So a kindergartner today is a high schooler several years from now, or they don't get the same training. So with the schools, we constantly have to come in and do this training over and over again because kids are moving through and they don't necessarily get the training. And so we talk about, you know, I was going to say tornado drills, I'm from the Midwest. Talk about earthquake drills, you know, we do the fire drills, we do active shooter drills, so that the kids learn as they grow up and it becomes more instinctive. And with the police departments, we focus a lot on high risk, low frequency type of events. I know that you guys have a hard time believing this, but it's really not natural to run towards somebody who wants to hurt you. And so, you know, the big thing with Columbine, if you guys remember that kind of that original school shooting thing, the officers set up on the outside and they surrounded the place. And that really changed the way law enforcement addresses active shooters. And so what we have to do is we have to train not only with each other, but we have to teach the junior officers that we're hiring every year that, I'm sorry, right? This is what you signed up for. If you hear this going on in there, you're going. And so it's not necessarily that we believe this is going to happen to this school or that school or any school, but we have to understand what our role and responsibility is when it happens, and we want your students to understand what to do. So the reason why we're training is because we're that constant turnover of students and of officers and making sure everybody's always on the same page.
Thank you very much for that clarification.
Very good point. And just to let you guys know, the last training we did out of this station was at winter break at Valhalla High School. We did a 2-day training. I know Ryan was there. We incorporated fire response with us, first time ever. And we invited El Cajon, La Mesa, and the California Highway Patrol. So they all, we all trained together. We enter the same way, we clear the same way. Our tactics are identical. So it doesn't matter what color your uniform is. When you get there, you're responding, and we're all moving in the same manner. We had FD there, they were triaging. We had actors, kids from the school that the JDOs recommended for us, that acted as victims. They were triaging them right there on scene with a perimeter. So I had a meeting this morning with the Santee captain, Dan Brislin, and they've already identified a school for the next break to go ahead and do active shooter training at that school. I'll get you that info, Brian. So this is constant. This is constantly going on. And we take advantage of the breaks in between the school year to utilize the school and the campus as a training ground.
And I think that dovetails nicely into the next comment or the questions from the community, which are, how do we address quote-unquote active shooter training with the children? Age appropriateness, how do we discuss this with the kids? There are some questions, you know, can parents have their children opt out of that type of language? They don't want to scare the kids, right? So we want to keep our students safe. We don't want to put them in a level of anxiety, which unfortunately happens a lot with our media today. So how, if we have any suggestions, best to address that comment or those topics?
Mike? Detective Patterson.
So 15 years ago, having deputies go on to an elementary school campus and do a lockdown drill was unheard of. I worked at Valhalla for 4 years, from 2010 to 14. And we did drills all the time. And then we started branching out, and I'd go to some of the other schools out in the community and talk to the principals, and I go, hey, we're here to help you if you want to do a lockdown drill. I go, no, we're fine. But now we do drills. I do 10 to 15 lockdown drills a school year from high schools, middle schools, elementary schools, and we gear those training towards the age of the kids. So we're not going to come in all tactical with our big scary vests that look cool to the kids if it's a middle school or a second grader or a third grader, stuff like that. So we train towards our audience. So we kind of gear it towards that. When we go to these campuses, the principals are usually like, oh, we did the lockdown drill in 12 minutes. Look how fast we did it. But when all the kids are in their class and they know that the drill's coming, it's easy to do that drill. When we have Hillsdale and the kids are getting out of school, that's the hard part of locking kids down when everyone's out and about. So I tell the principals that fire drills are great, but when was the last time you watched the news and you saw the news say a school burned down? But you watch the news and they're talking about school shootings all the time. So that's where our focus is that.
Thank you. We had promised to try to get this wrapped up, give or take 7:15. So a couple of quick follow-up questions. We're not gonna get to everything that was sent to us, but we had a specific question come in from the Rancho San Diego Elementary community and asking, does law enforcement have access to keys, gates, et cetera, onto our campuses? Ryan?
Currently they do not. It would be very difficult for law enforcement to carry keys for all the schools. I did meet with a POWI detective for the Sheriff's Department several weeks ago, and one of the things they've done, and I think some of the schools at Grossmont Unified School District, they have locked blocks or locked boxes in front of the schools. So that way you can keep keys, maps, contact information in those boxes. And so I'm gonna be looking over the summer. We got a lot of work to do, but that's gonna be one of my summer projects, is to develop those locked boxes in front of our elementary and middle schools. So in the event that we do have an event where law enforcement needs access to those, that's where that stuff is gonna be for for them to utilize that to get on our campuses.
All right, thank you. The last question for the panel, and Brian, you may want to start off, Captain Grano, join in, is the concept of parents understanding what is in your child's backpack, but also understanding what's on your child's social media comments.
Yeah, you know, backpacks, and back in the day, I mean, you know, it wouldn't be a problem to inspect somebody's backpack if you thought they were doing something wrong. It should be no different for social media. I mean, if you get a report that your kids are involved in bullying, or don't take their word for it. I mean, I think my daughter's an angel, but if she's getting accused of something, I'm gonna investigate. That's my nature, I'm a cop. But it would be no different than someone saying that she might have brought a weapon to school. I'm gonna search her backpack. It'd be no different than searching her social media if you think that your kids are involved in something. We really need your help. Administrators need your help, not to just always go back and say, well, my kid would never do it. It's really coming upon you as well to help us get to the bottom of a lot of this stuff. At least even to clear your kid, and then let us know how we can help.
Yeah, I mean, I will add to it. Like, the more you can help, the better. Because we can't go and just take the child's phone and start to look through their Instagram or start to look through their Snapchat, but you can. It's your child. And for instance, like the one that you had shown up there that was from November that we just found a few weeks ago, that child's first reaction to it was to send it to 3 friends. And then they were talking about it in class, and the teacher's the one that was like, what are you guys talking about? And then the teacher forced them to come up to us. The same thing at home, like, bring them in, come in with them, have them come talk to us so we can, you know, we can see it and we can handle it, and please help educate them to not send it to their friends as the first reaction of what they want to do, because it's just like when you then see it and it's been shared with 50 other people and there's a lot of comments that are written underneath it and no one really knows where it came from or where it started. So, like, the sooner that we can all be on the same page, the better.
I'll say the same thing to you guys that I say if you want to have my coffee with the community, which I'm having one in Spring Valley next month. And we talk about all kinds of community challenges that we're having. And this is a community. And I challenge the community members, because we're huge proponents of community outreach and community policing, probably the most robust community policing that you'll see within any sheriff's jurisdiction. But community policing goes both ways. So you are our eyes and ears. There's no way that we can police your children and what they're posting. We don't have the manpower for that. So it's very important. I mean, I know it's so easy just not to pay attention to that stuff. I have a 15-year-old daughter, Valhalla, who's unfortunately very attractive. So one of the burdens that we carry. So, you know, my wife is on top of her Instagram or Snapchat. She follows her on there, and she's like, whether you like it or not, I'm following you. And before she texts any male subjects, she has to run that text message through my wife. They're all subjects until I vetted them. They're all suspicious until I vetted them. So, you know, she has to show that text message to my wife before she sends it. And, you know, it's a lot of work. You've got to be in their business. Fortunately, you know, my wife stays home, so she has the time to do that. I know a lot of you guys are working or single parents, and it's a daunting task to stay on top of your kids and what they're posting, what they're doing. You guys all heard about this recent incident in Valhalla, the kid with the gun that we arrested. I can't give too many details because he's a juvenile. Just know that we did the homework, and we went and backtracked his Instagram account, and in 2011, so that would have made him like 9 years old, he posted a picture of a gun on his Instagram, and he challenged people to F with him when he was 11. So I don't know if his parents knew that or not, but I mean, here's a pattern of behavior, you know, that we see here. Would have been nice to know that went on back then, so the juvenile detectives could get involved and address it. Does this kid have mental issues? What's going on with him? Why does he feel threatened? Why does he feel like he's got to bring a gun to school? So when you backtrack, you see the history, you see the posting, you see all that. Sometimes that's too late. We need that information up front, not after an incident happens. So if there's anything you can take away from this, please, that is very important. And responsible reporting, that's a term I kind of came up with because of what happens with social media. So the two things, you know, make sure you know what they're posting, what they're talking about. And number two, if they do see or hear something, report.
report it to you or to an adult instead of reposting it and creating kind of havoc that we really don't need. It just makes our jobs a lot more difficult, and it increases your stress and anxiety levels. And we have to have meetings like this.
I'm gonna echo Marco's thing really quick. And I too, with an 18-year-old daughter and an 11-year-old son, social media is a blessing. Like, all of you guys want us to text you and send a tweet that your kids are okay the minute something bad happens. And maybe we get there sooner rather than later, but it's a blessing for that reason. And the same reason you give a phone to an 11, a 12, or a 13-year-old kid, they don't understand the gravity of what they do on that thing. They don't understand having to look a person in the eye and actually communicate. It's keyboard courage. They can say and do things without anybody figuring it out. And so what Captain Garmo said is so, so important. Parental involvement. Just be involved. Talk to them about their responsibilities on social media and, take care of business, because your kids are just as important to us as they are to you.
Thank you, guys. As your school board representative, I want to thank everybody for your time and your attention tonight. And there's a lot of things to do in San Diego on a random evening. And to come out here to take part in our community and to listen to what's being said and understand what our district is doing, it's very much appreciated that you came. I'd like to thank everybody on the panel for your time tonight. And look forward to doing it again, because we will be doing it again. If I can have one comment from as a trustee, all the studies show that children that attend school, if they're anxious, they have high anxiety, it creates a more difficult learning environment. In today's social media and general media, there's a high anxiety about school shootings, firearms, gun safety. If you really dig into the facts and you look at all the statistics, school shootings are down since the 90s. That's the reality, but that's not generally perceived. And we all know that perception is reality, especially when you're a teenage student or younger. So trying to calm a lot of that anxiety, as a parent, that's what we do, right? And our district is taking this exceptionally seriously. And to bring these gentlemen on stage and to talk to you, and please, if you have questions afterwards, please come up and ask us. But thank you so much for coming. I'm going to give the mic to Dr. Miroshiro so we can have final comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. We ordered pizza and refreshments for 200. It looks like there's about 100 here. So please take some home for your kids. We also prepared packets of the PowerPoint presentation that you saw, as well as the questions. Those will be posted on the website, but there are also copies at the back of the room and at the front here with our interpreters for you to take with you also. And again, the safety and security of your children in our schools is our first priority, and we're grateful for Ryan's leadership. And please join me once again in thanking the San Diego Sheriff's Department and the Elk Home Police Department for their partnership and their presence here tonight. Several minutes to answer personal questions, and please let's grab some food and feed our children.